We're coming in hot with inspiring guests, witty banter, and colorful commentary for today's veterans and military community. This is the Tango Alpha Lima Podcast.
They call me crazy because I'm facing all my giants. They try to scare me into thinking I can fight it. They tell me I should never even think of trying. But that's just me, I'm gonna live out in defiance.
Hello and welcome back, Alphas, to the Tango Alpha Lima Experience. We have missed you over the last 7 days, but we are here today. And it's not just me, it's that super awesome person over there, Ashley Gudemuth. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well. How are you, Jeff?
I'm outstanding, because you know what this is? This is Jeff Daly Birth Month, and we're going to celebrate every single day.
Every day, every moment.
Every single day until the 21st. And then, you know, we'll keep celebrating after until the 31st, which is will also be my last day of my term as commander of Hollywood Post 43. What? Yep. Almost done with that. That was fast, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was talking to Holly. They can't see that I was, that she went, that was fast. Okay. I think we have a show. Do we have a show?
Yeah, I think we do. I think this is what we do every week. But let's see how we can roll with it.
Okay.
You know what I want to talk to you about? I want to talk to you about something that JJ Abrams, Glenn Powell did. It's a documentary called Blue Angels, and it's on Amazon. This is from Variety. It says Amazon Studios has landed worldwide rights to the U.S. naval aviation documentary The Blue Angels, which is backed by production companies of J.J. Abrams and Top Gun Maverick star Glenn Powell. The film, shot with IMAX cameras, chronicles a year in the cockpit with one of the world's top aviator teams, the Navy and Marine Corps Flight Squadron, through their intense training and aerial touring show. Abrams, Bad Robot, Powell's Barnstorm Productions, Zipper Bros Films, and Dolphin Entertainment produced the project. This fascinating and layered documentary is wholly representative of the kind of work ethic, teamwork, and perseverance that goes into being a Blue Angel, said Brianna Oh, Amazon's head of documentary features. We are incredibly honored to join this talented filmmaking team in bringing their story to audiences around the world. The film will play in theaters on a yet-to-be-determined date before landing on Amazon on Prime Video. The Blue Angels will be the theatrical documentary experience of the year, and we're thrilled to share it with a global audience, said John Turner, head of documentaries for IMAX. Our partnership with Amazon Studios marks an exciting chapter for IMAX as we reimagine how to broaden our original documentaries for a streaming audience. We're grateful for the enthusiasm and support that the Amazon team has for the project. It reflects the infectious spirit that the Blues have instilled in millions of fans for 80 years. The film was directed and edited by Paul Crowder, UFO, and produced by Glenn Zipper, Undefeated, through Zipper Brothers Films, Mark Monroe, Icarus, through Diamond Docks, and Sean Stewart, Challenger, The Final Flight, through Sutter Road Picture Company. Rob Stone, Greg, these are a lot of names, Jeff. This is a lot of names. One of the most remarkable aspects of the Blue Angels story is their relentless pursuit of excellence. It's a message that I think will be as inspiring to the audience as it has been to the filmmakers, said Abrams, the CEO of Bad Robot.
That was there were a lot of names. It's very Hollywood. Like, I could see the credits. Ooh. I could see the credits rolling as you were reading. I think a documentary shot with IMAX cameras requires that many names, because it requires that many people to pay for it. That sounds like a really expensive documentary.
It does, but like, they didn't really tell me anything about it. It was just like, oh, this person was in it. This person was in it. This person. And you're just like, okay.
Well, they're telling you it's going to be beautiful.
Is there going to be airplanes in it?
Right.
My favorite. So I hung around with the Thunderbirds for a little bit, the Air Force Blue Angels. I'm sure they'd love to be called that. oh my God, we were at a VFW, and they tailor, I don't know if I've told this story on here before, but they tailor their suits, their flight suits, to make them look like buff. Like, they make them look all sexy, right? And we're in this VFW, and dang it, if some woman didn't come up from behind, like cigarette in mouth, and grab his Christmas hams. And We just went in for it, just quick squeeze. And we were like, oh my God. He goes, happens all the time. They make them, you know, when they take pictures, they have to put their hands behind their back so that they're not like looking like they're touching anybody. But apparently people go right in. So I would, let's stop touching,
touching fake packages.
Stop touching any of the Thunderbirds, the Blue Angels. consent for these flight demonstration teams.
Because it's not something
we talk about.
It's not the Thunder from down under. It's the Thunderbirds from above. So some respect.
True, hopefully
the Zipper Bros. I love that version other than Brothers, by the way. Hopefully the Zipper Bros production will earn them some more respect. I think it's going to be beautiful. I think I think that the Oscar that Top Gun didn't get, this might get for the documentary.
Okay, I'll be there.
Yeah. And you can talk smack. You can talk Thunderbird versus Blue Angel smack.
Yeah, I will.
You will, undoubtedly. All right, we're going to put that smack talk on pause because we have company coming. Let me spruce up. We do have company coming. Today we're going to be joined by James Sisko, a combat-tested leader and seasoned executive with distinguished 23-year military career as a reconnaissance marine and naval intelligence officer. We'll be back to talk with James about his military career and his best-selling book, The War Journal, A Young Marine's Discovery of Critical Life Lessons from Desert Storm, right after the break.
The American Legion is raising awareness about PTSD and veteran suicide by offering hope, camaraderie, and support.
Be the one to help end veteran suicide.
The goal of the American Legion's Be the One campaign is to destigmatize asking for mental health support.
Be the one to ask a veteran in your life how they're doing.
Be the one who saves one veteran.
Go to betheone.org and help the American Legion end veteran suicide.
Will you be the one?
Welcome back, Alphas. We have a special guest because every person that wears the Eagle, Globe, and Anchor is special. This is James Sisko. He's even special on top of special. I'm reading here that he finished his Marine Corps recruit training as an honor graduate, then later went to officer candidate school and was a top national graduate from Marine Corps officer candidate school. You do school so well, and not only can you read, but apparently you can write, as we're going to find out here in a bit. So thanks for being here. Thanks for bringing the mantle of genius Marine to the show. I try to do it, but I don't have this. I don't have these creds that you have. So welcome to the show, and I hope you're having an amazing day that we can, you know, we can feed off of, so that we can also have an amazing day.
No, I appreciate that, Jeff. I kind of humble myself. I just a step above eating crayons, so we're good.
You only eat the name brand Crayola.
Okay, but do you have a favorite color flavor? Because I've got mine so far is red. I had a bunch of Marines have me eat a crayon. Well, we all ate crayons together, and I'll tell you what. That was an experience.
Yeah, I go with I don't go with the darker shades because it really tints your teeth.
That's a good point. And then you have to have that panic attack 3 days later when you're like, did I eat beets? Oh my God, am I dying? Yeah. But I digress. We're here to talk about you. So you wrote this book about your experiences in Operation Desert Storm. When you were about to go into it, when you were about to deploy, what did you think was going to happen, and how was it different or the same from what actually happened?
Yeah, nobody's asked me that. You have to understand the context. I was in, in recon battalion. We had been training for, I was a pretty senior, salty guy, 4 years, involuntary extended. So from a training and preparedness perspective, I was ready. But if you remember back then in 1991, there was, Saddam's army was huge. He had just invaded, he invaded Kuwait. He had been in war with Iran. He had gassed the Kurds. There was a lot of concern with the size of his army using chemical weapons and biological weapons. So from a perspective of preparedness, we were ready to go. We were motivated with regard to the environment and the threat. There was some concern. And the other thing was that this was the first time we had really operated in a desert environment. Most of my training was, I did cold weather deployments, I've done jungle training, really. So this was a different variable, which made it kind of concerning for us.
Okay, all right. But what from like a, all right, from an emotional level, when you were about to go in, and go like, because you've, this obviously impacted you a lot, right? You wrote a book about it, became a number one bestseller. Are you, so emotionally, I am a robot. How are you, you're going into this, are you just like, man, this is, I know this is going to be different tactically, but what's going to happen? Are you worried? Are you nervous?
No, not at all. I think about this. I'm a 21-year-old Marine, 180 pounds of spring steel and sex appeal, totally Kevlar, trained, ready to fight. And you're with your guys, your buds. These are the guys that you trained with. So from a, psychological perspective, this is something that we want to do. We want, we have years of training behind us. Now we want to prove that, we're ready to do this. So the other thing that I'll add is that me personally, I had this aura or sense that I was going to come out of this unscathed. I wouldn't be hurt or killed. So that was kind of the mindset going in.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, you had kind of just had that feeling of safety.
The Marina fested.
I don't know.
Yeah, there you go. Marina fested. Nice.
Well, I'm going to stay with the book now. So, I'm here in Hollywood, and we decide the movies we want to watch by their trailer, right? So, if you could pick a story from your book to tell right now, and it would be a trailer, and make the alphas want to log off and get on Amazon and buy it right now, what story would you tell?
I would tell the story of Mike and Ashley. And so we had just come off our first mission. I was sitting in a little circle with five of different guys, and Mike was sitting next to me. And Lance Corporal Stroud was about 20 feet away, and he said, "Hey, Corporal Sisko, can you help me with the KY gear?" KY gear is the crypto gear for the radios. And in typical Marine fashion, I was like, what the fuck, are you a retard? Do it yourself, and everybody starts laughing. And Mike looks over at me, and in a typical saying, he's like, "Bad dog." And I looked at Mike and I go, "Yeah, I was kind of a dick." So I got up and I walked away. I was over helping Stroud with the KY gear for about less than a minute. And I heard this large explosion boom sound. And it came right from where I was sitting. And I ran back, and there was Mike. A hand grenade had come off his gear, fell between his legs, and detonated. So when I got there, I was the first person there. The other guys had gotten shrapnel and were, yelling and screaming and crawling away. But Mike was sitting there with his both arms were gone. And if you've ever seen somebody who has been blown up, there's not a lot of blood and guts like in the movies. It's really the heat from the hand grenade creates a burning, and so everything is black and charred and powder burn. And he just looked at me, and his head fell down. And I have all kinds of training from being in recon, and can trach people and IVs and CPR and things like that. But he was dead. There was nothing to do, nothing I could do. I stood there for a second looking at him, and the corpsman ran up, knocked me out of the way, started working on him, and he was flown out. So that's just a very powerful, opening scene, and almost like Saving Private Ryan in a way, and the beach landing. And then the next scene would be where I volunteer to go through his personal effects, separate his personal effects from his military gear, because the personal effects go home, and get to the story, to cut to the chase. When I was going through his wallet, I found a picture of the girl that I was dating at the time. And it, on the back, it said, "Love, Ashley." So the emotions that I felt at that specific moment were something that I don't think that many people can relate to. Having your friend die and hours later finding out you were betrayed by him with your girlfriend. So in a sense, I want to kill the guy who's already dead, who was my friend. I think that would be, you know, a very powerful, you know, trailer for the book.
That would be a very powerful short film all on its own, mm-hmm. to be quite honest. I don't think many people would. You might be the only person with that story. I'll just say that.
Now, if I may, I'll kind of align with Ashley. I think another trailer would be a really funny one. It was the day we were going into the breach. We were going to go across the border, and there was thousands of troops and vehicles and everything in staging areas. And this would be funny for you, Ashley. We come rolling up in our Humvees. I'm standing behind the 50 cal with a green cravat bandana on my head. We're playing Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle, and everybody's in like mop level 3 and 4, and I'm just in my camis, my boots untied with a cravat on my head.
And
that was like, everybody we drove by, they just started screaming and hollering and hoorahs. And I think that would be another, you know, a good trailer for the film. But
that's perfect. It sounds like Apocalypse Now, you know, when they're getting just mad. Ah. I love it. People embrace that.
All right, Ash.
Well, you know, so you have the book. What do you want people to take from it? You know, a lot. It's so much work to write a book. It's so much work to write anything and to do all the stuff you've done. You must want people to take something from it and hopefully, you know, or is it just money? Is it just money, James?
No. Yeah, I'll tell you, honestly, no, it's not money. I'm going to lose money on the book. I paid around $3,000 to publish the book because I had to do it in black. I couldn't do it in black and white, all the pictures, everything. And, you know, I had to make it marine friendly. If there was no pictures, it would have, you know, right. Nobody's going to read it. So it cost $3,000 something to publish it. I make a $2.12 on each copy. It's not about the money. I'm going to tell you, honestly, you know, I've been asked this question a lot of times, and I'm going to answer it in the best way I can. The title of the book should have been like FMF Life Lessons, you know, Fleet Marine Force or Instruction Manual 2718, you know, Critical Life Lessons. The reason why it's so important to me is if I had read the war journal, this is the actual journal itself. If I had read that throughout my life, it would have saved me a lot of pain and anguish. It would have allowed me to make better decisions in my life, in my personal life, in my professional life. And the most rewarding thing that I've received from writing this book was I was at home one evening and I received a phone call. I looked at my iPhone and I'm like, I don't know this number. And, you know, I just answered it anyway. And I said, "Hey, good evening, Jim Sisko." And it's like, "Hey, Jim, you don't know me. My name is Steve. I'm a former Marine. And I just wanted to thank you." And I'm like, "Oh, hey, Steve. Good on you. You know, what's up?" He goes, "I was in a really dark place in my life. And I was thinking about committing suicide. And I read your book. And I have purpose and I found purpose and meaning." So I don't really care about the money. I don't care about, you know, 5-star ratings, and I don't care about, you know, being a number one bestseller. What I wrote the book, why I wrote the book, and what I take the most from it is helping people, because people can read this book and learn things and have a deeper understanding about faith and religion and relationships and education and things like that, that will help them throughout their lives. And two other like feedbacks. One I got was that this book should be out in front of every Marine Corps recruiting station and it's mandatory reading before they join. And I think that would be pretty cool. And that's kind of like, that's kind of it for me.
I think so, that's awesome. Yeah, that's where the real purpose comes in, helping other people.
Right. So do you see, and it, you know, I brought it up before, but, and I really see some visual activity here. Do you have any other plans for this work?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because people have said this could be a movie, and people are like, you wrote Generation Kill before it came out. And, you know, I have actually written two full seasons of a miniseries, you know, somewhat that would be like Band of Brothers. Mm-hmm. And it's based upon, you know, events and activities throughout my life, and it goes in chronological order. And there are some really fun episodes. There are some really difficult episodes, emotional episodes, but each episode has a life lesson or something to learn from. And in the book, there are several of those life lessons to learn from. And really that's what it is for me. If people can take away those, if this could go to a different venue or format, you know, I would love to see that happen. And like I said, I've written two full episodes of a miniseries.
Wow. It sounds like sounds promising. And your dog agrees, who came in and heard you and laid down behind you.
let me just say something. It's really funny because my company also does a lot of work for veteran suicide programs. We developed a proof of concept, and there's all these different programs and initiatives for veteran suicide. And I joke around and I say, that's the worst therapy dog ever. You know, when I'm feeling down or depressed, you know, I want him to come over and lay on my lap, and all these like, hey dad, want to play ball, you know, and I'm going to him to, you know, pet him. So worst emotional therapy dog ever.
It might be the best.
Either way.
He's interrupting your down mood with something up, you know. I don't know.
There you go. You never know.
From somebody who doesn't have pets or even plants, nothing
alive in the daily household.
Right. Nothing requires my intervention to continue to exist. And I like it that way. I like it that way.
That's how he wants it.
So you have the book, you have the dream. Hollywood, anybody out there? I see this as a Netflix, HBO Max kind of a deal.
Let's link them up. There's all kinds. There's heartbreak. There's betrayal.
So if anybody out there that has some kind of connect.
Sexiness.
I'll wait. Anybody has some kind of connect, we can, we'll have his LinkedIn in the show notes. Is that what we're going to do? Yeah, we'll have his LinkedIn in the show notes and you can reach out. I might have a couple people to reach out to as well. So I hope that you can at least have that conversation to get it out there in that sort of way. I do have a question. It's been a long time, so I think that you're okay with this question. If you're not okay with the question, Holly will have it edited out and it will never have happened. How was the communication with that other Ashley about what happened?
You know, once again, you have to understand the time frame. There's no iPhones, there's no Facebook and chat and instant communication. You are waiting in a line for 30 minutes to get on a phone call for, you know, overseas operator for 5 minutes, you know, at that time. I was still writing letters and getting care packages. So how did, you know, after I found out, you know, it was really difficult because I didn't know what to do. And there was no way, you know, we talk about today's society, everyone wants closure. I need closure, or, you know, and you can't get closure on something like that. I didn't reconcile until I actually returned back to Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. And we met briefly in person, and I was out of the Marine Corps. So I just drove home and started my life over. At that point, you know, there was months had transpired. So, you know, I was no longer angry or mad or, you know, I was done. I had put it behind me and it was over. You know, probably the most difficult part of dealing with that was with her parents, because they had really brought me into their lives and was part of their family. And it was really hard for them and for me. And that's actually one of the episodes in the Netflix miniseries, or whatever miniseries, is a really funny story about the first time that I met her parents. And I don't know if we have enough time, but if not, no worries. But it was a really funny story.
We're getting a Netflix preview. Like, go ahead. Yeah, I'm good.
All right. So imagine this, you know, Marines, Camp Lejeune, 1990s, not really well received. Here's a young debutante. Her father is a dentist and really well known in the community, debutante ball, things like that. Her and I meet, we start dating. And the first time I have to meet her parents, she's like, warns me, you know, my dad doesn't like Marines. And, you know, we've all heard that. So we plan to meet her parents at their beach cottage on the Outer Banks in North Carolina. We get to the house, and, you know, the mother is the typical Southern belle, a plump, fun lady with a Southern drawl who's very welcoming and hospitable. And you have her husband, who is this, you know, like, aristocratic Southern gentleman who is very quiet and reserved. And we come in, and just in time for dinner, we sit down, and the mom's chatty catty the whole dinner, and everybody's trying, and the dad's not saying anything. So the funny part about it is, they're like, oh, we're eating dinner. You know, we finished dinner, and, you know, the dad probably said maybe one or two sentences the whole time, nothing directed at me. And dinner's over, and I'm like, let me help with the dishes, you know? And they're like, no, that's not you, go ahead. And her father had walked out onto the porch and sat on his rocking chair and started reading his paper. And they're like, no, you don't have to help. So as a bold young Marine, I did what anyone would do, walked right outside, sat down in the rocking chair next to him, looked at him, picked up a piece of paper, you know, picked up the paper and started reading. We didn't say a word for 45 minutes. And then finally the Ashley's mom came in and said, hey, we have dessert. We ate dessert. And then we had to leave. So Ashley and I left, and we're leaving the driveway, and I'm driving away, and I can see them waving. And about an hour later, Ashley got a call from her mother, and she goes, I don't know what Jim and your dad talked about on the porch, but he said he really likes him. And that was kind of, you know, it was kind of, for me, it was really funny. This one, you know, story in the miniseries, and you know, things that I look back and reflect on. Everything that I've done in the Marine Corps, it wasn't tragic. It wasn't a tragedy. There was so much fun and great times and things I've learned from, and I will never regret anything that happened to me or my time in the Marine Corps or the Navy.
Well, it sounds like something the kids say these days, say less. And that worked for you and her dad. Yeah, that's outstanding. All right, you have any farewell wishes, Ashley Gudermuth?
I can't wait to see you on stage receiving the Oscar for your performance.
Oh.
in your film, bandana with you and your camis. It all sounds awesome. I'm so glad that your mission is to help other people and to help other veterans and military families, which is definitely what we're all about.
And yeah. Hey. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, I really do appreciate you having me on. And, you know, if there's anything that I want to impart, it's this one thing. It was easy to write the book. It was. I mean, all I did was transcribe my journal notes and then just add context and flavor to it. The most difficult thing for me, and because when I wrote the journal, I wrote it and I put it on my bookshelf and sea bags and everything and never looked at it for 32 years. And I didn't talk about any of the issues that, you know, I kind of just compartmentalized with the journal. And the biggest challenge I faced, like I said, was not writing the book. It was actually talking about these things and how they impacted me and how they had an impact on my life and my development and my relationships. And this has been the most difficult thing for me to do, is actually be honest and forthright and talk about it. And a lot of the people that I speak with, they commend me for my bravery. And I say, I'm not brave at all. I mean, some people have stories that are worse than mine and experiences worse than mine. It's being able to talk about it openly is really the challenge. And that's the challenge that a lot of soldiers, airmen, you know, sailors face, is not being able to talk to somebody about it, not being able to open up. And if I can talk to the audience and say, it takes more courage to talk about it and be honest and forthright and deal with it than it does to put it away and lock it up. So get that. And if the book helps you and motivates you and gives you that courage, then it's a victory for everybody.
Thank you for that message. And I hope that the right ears pick up what you just said. And also, we could use that as a PSA for Be the One. But let's give a shout out to your company that you said is working in that suicide space, so that people can look that up. And we may have to have you back one day to talk about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd love to. So here it is, Enodo Global.
Oh, there you go.
This is we actually sponsor a rugby league, and this is my rugby shirt, but it's Enodo Global, and Enodo actually means to solve or elucidate in Latin. And right on our front landing page at the bottom is the veteran suicide proof of concept. And it's an amazing project where we scour any open source information from social media and chat rooms and friend groups, and we listen to the conversations about suicide. And you learn so much when you listen about how suicide ideation manifests and how people embrace it. You know, see you in Valhalla, he lost his battle with the war. These narratives are very powerful, and they speak to how people start to accept suicide. And then we watch their, you know, these conversations evolve, and it provides us indications and warnings that we can now engage with them and engage with them in a way that's positive and not just like what we've seen, you know, hey, we need to enroll you in our program and we need to medicate you. And that's not what everybody needs. And these are really, you know, there's hundreds of, you know, nonprofits out there, and everybody has an idea or a solution, and I commend them for it. But what we try to focus on is getting ahead of the problem. And doing that by identifying high risk individuals and then engaging with them or interdicting before they decide to take their lives.
All right. And I don't see in the show notes like a web address for that or your book. Oh, she's got it. And the book as well. Of course. Super Producer Holly is always on it. I don't even know why I even ask anymore, because it'll be the one time I don't ask. She'll be like, oh yeah, you should have asked about that. So thank you so much. Thank you for everything that you do. I mean, you're saving lives, you're inspiring lives, but at the same time, you're also making some of us feel less than with your way you went through the Marine Corps, honor graduate, basically king of the hill of Marine Corps training. You're king of the hill of Marine Corps training.
Let me say this, Jeff. My grandfather taught me a valuable lesson in my life.
Yes.
You know, I would come back and say, hey, Grandpa, I just won the, you know, honor grad at a boot camp, or, hey, Grandpa, I just won the Commandant's Trophy. And he would say to me, "Hey, Jim, that and a quarter will get you on the bus, but you better have a quarter." So I don't look at the things I've done in any special way. I've been very fortunate in my life, but I have to stay humble because there are people out there who've done so much more than me and experienced more trauma. And, you know, I was in Bethesda at the, I had to go hurt my knee in rugby and had to get my knee drained. And I went through the clinic in Bethesda and I saw, you know, amputees and I saw veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan with missing limbs. And I felt actually bad that, you know, my knee hurt. So I am humbled by the people who came before me and the people who will serve after me and people like yourself. And because everyone in some way is a hero.
Well, I will tell you this, there are people who have done a lot less than you who are the furthest thing from humble. So with that, I'm going to thank James Sisco for spending his time here and for all the work that he does when he's not on camera. He's helped, they're helping you and inspiring you. And I encourage you to get the book, I encourage you to write your streaming network of choice and demand that that book become a mini series. So thank you so much, James. And the, for the rest of you, don't go anywhere. You can probably go to the bathroom or something, but you don't have a lot of time because we're going to be right back after the break.
Advancing the vision.
Advancing the vision.
The American Legion educates, mentors, and leads new generations of Americans.
We are veterans strengthened in America. We are the American Legion.
Well, that was an exciting interview with James. And you know what I love? I love being in the company of other brilliant, genius level Marines because we get such a bad rap.
No.
Yeah.
You get a great rap. I give you all the good reps.
Yeah, you wrap the crayons and then you present them to me. And yeah, I get how it is. All right. I don't want to get into Marine bashing, so we're going to move along. We're going to go right into the always fun, always epic, always exciting. Pew, 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 pew. Rapid fire. I remember, who was it that used to get upset? Because it was you, Holly, who get upset because I would do this before we even rapid fired. All right. This first one is from one of my constituents in Legion Town, USA.
Mayor.
All right. This one is walk across Texas. Hey.
Hey.
You might see them on the road when you're driving around. Or running around and picking up trash. Maybe they'll help you. All right, Earl Graham Post 159 in Bryan, Texas, joined over 100 teams to participate in the 2023 Walk Across Texas. This event is sponsored by Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. From February 1st to April 7th, this team of Legionnaires logged over 1,000 miles. The program is designed to get people up and moving. Studies have shown that if people will start a fitness program and continue for more than 30 days, they have a better chance of continuing in the future. Department Vice Commander Tom Marty was one of the members of the Walking Legionnaires. He stated that there were days early on that it was a little cold or rainy, but I got out there and I tried to walk for an hour or more. He developed a route around his neighborhood and started to see his neighbors on their walks. At the end of the program, Tom had started logging over 4 miles a day. Marty also stated that he would wear some form of American Legion attire, most often his Be the One t-shirt. As he walked his neighborhood from time to time, neighbors would ask about the shirt. This gave Tom an opportunity to talk about the issue of veteran suicide and the Legion as an organization. Post 159 Commander Dale Hutchcraft, one of my Legion College fellow alumni, by the way, was also part of the Walking Legionnaires team. Hutchcraft said she suffers from knee issues. The low stress of walking in her neighborhood was helpful in many ways. It provided some pain relief and a healthy feeling with stress management. You know something about persistence leading to habit, don't you?
Heck yeah, I do. If anything, feed into the natural OCD that we may all have. Just, you know, you do something every single day until your body goes, if I quit this, I will be very angry. The, I've ran every day for it's like 2,500 days now. It's over 8 years. I've not missed any days, no matter what, hit by cars, COVID, moving. But it would be harder for me now to stop running every day than it would for me to continue. For example, I had somebody try to stop me at 0.99 of a mile. I was running. They wanted directions. When you get to like that point and you're just like, oh my God, I made a construction worker run with me for about 3/4 of a mile once because he wanted directions. I was like, you can come, I'll take you to the house, but I cannot stop running. The first mile, I can't stop. The subsequent miles, I can. But, you know, it make it so that it becomes harder to quit than it does to keep going.
Right. And I love the idea of wearing Legion gear and Be the One t-shirt and spreading the good word as a human billboard out there. Although a moving billboard, that's innovation.
Harder to hit, yeah.
That's innovation from Post 159 there in Texas. And shout out to Dale Hutchcraft. Again, she was a classmate of mine at National Legion College. Yay. She wasn't in the right district, but we forgive her. She wasn't in District 5, the best district ever alive. Okay, we're going to go on to rapid fire number pew pew 2. Registration is now live for the 2023 Legacy Run. So instead of pew pew, I'm going to go vroom vroom for the motorcycles. All right, registration is now live for the 2023 American Legion Legacy Run and will close August 9th. The 5-day 1,100-mile ride will leave American Legion Post 6 in Kokomo, Indiana, on August 20th and travel through Michigan, Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee before the final stop at the Hendrix Motorsport Campus in Concord, or is this one Concord? This one's Concord, North Carolina. That's a side story. When we were in Massachusetts, we saw a sign that said Concord like this, C-O-N-C-O-R-D, but we were quickly corrected. It's Concord. All right, this is North Carolina, so it's Concord on August 24th. The annual motorcycle ride raises funds for the American Legion Legacy Scholarship Fund, which provides financial assistance with college for children of U.S. military personnel killed while on active duty on or after September 11th, 2001, as well as for children of post 9/11 veterans with a combined disability rating of 50% or greater by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Last year's ride raised a record $1,324,548, the eighth time the Legacy Run has surpassed $1 million.
Wow. So they raise funds. I think it's all amazing, but it sort of reminds me of, like, you know, when people are like, hey, I'm running a marathon, I'm doing it for this cause, and then you donate to like their page. So mm-hmm. Are there like a bunch of bikers that are like knocking doors and you know, they have like the leathers and the long beards, and they're just like, hey, I'm here.
I don't think they knock on
doors. Giving page. That'd be I would give so much money to a biker that knocked on my door.
Well, they'd have to get on base, so it's easy for you to say that.
Well, they could if they're a veteran. They can use that retiree ID.
So yeah, they mostly hit us up, and then and they get some local businesses that donate, and I mean, and they have a lot of fun, apparently, riding across the land. That's all, and it's actually earned money, because 1,100 miles on a motorcycle is hard work.
Heck yeah.
I mean, I haven't ridden 1 mile. Super producer Holly is chiming in here that sometimes they pick up money at gas stops. And there aren't Sons of Anarchy. They are not robbing the gas stations. People are giving them money.
No, I would be fine with that if they did that.
It's for a good cause. Remember, we recently talked about a criminal who was a criminal because he had to take care of his family. Remember that? It was heartwarming.
Oh, that's right. It was heartwarming. And honestly, if you walked in and you were just like, hey, give me all your money, I don't want them to threaten anybody. But I feel right. like the person at the 7-Eleven would be like, of course.
Yeah. 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 Those markups are ridiculous anyway. So,
yeah,
all right, go get them, Legion Riders, the tip of the spear of the American Legion, as I've heard them referred to. All right, rapid fire number, pew, 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 that is 3. Biden has sent 1,500 troops to border ahead of expected migrant surge. This is from The Hill. The Biden administration is planning to temporarily deploy 1,500 active duty troops to the U.S.-Mexico border ahead of an expected surge in migrants. The announcement comes as Title 42, a policy that allows for rapid expulsion of migrants at the border and blocks them from seeking asylum, is set to expire on May 11th. A U.S. official told The Hill the troops would be deployed for 90 days. To assist with work, including ground-based detection and monitoring, data entry, and warehouse support, but they would not be doing law enforcement work. That's actually key to this, because when I first read this, I'm like, we have this silly little document called the Constitution that doesn't allow the armed forces to do a lot on American soil, but they won't be armed. If you read the whole article, you can figure this out for yourselves, and super producer Holly will make sure that you have that opportunity. They're not armed. They aren't doing any, they won't actually have contact with any of the migrants. It's, they're there to do all of the other things, to leave the actual agents free to handle the surge of traffic.
Yeah, it says deployed for 90 days. Yep. So not terribly long. It'll be good amount of time. Ground-based detection, monitoring, data entry, warehouse support. So Jeff, they're sending in the Air Force.
Right.
It's fine, guys. It's fine. Gonna be all right.
No cross training needed. They just go there and do what you always do, right?
You're going to be good. They're deployed to the United States. Like I say all the time, my husband deploys to Tampa. People don't believe me. Look at this. A U.S. official told The Hill the troops would be deployed to Texas, right? The border.
This side of the border.
Right.
Well, that's that story. I'm glad. And it's interesting to me that they're not using guard.
Well, they're busy.
They're what?
They're busy. They got stuff going on. Don't you think that the last few weeks with all the issues that the guard has had, maybe they need to just tone it down a bit, stay out of the news?
And chill it out. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But we aren't going to judge the guard here today.
I am.
Yeah. You are. The Air National Guard only, though.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. We have final thoughts and shout outs. I have one. I don't know if you do.
Nope.
All right. Well, I have a shout out. I met someone. I was at an event a few weeks ago, and this young lady actually recognized me. I felt like Ashley Gudermuth, and she walked up, and now we're friends. And she's joined the auxiliary at 43. She also volunteers with Wings Over Wendy's. Do we have them on the show once, Holly? The Wings Over Wendy's people, or have I just heard about them other places? She's a public affairs associate at Employer of the Guard and Reserve. So
is that ESGR, Employer Support of the Guard?
Yeah, Employer Support. Yeah, that is okay. ESGR. Yep.
ESGR, yeah. So ESGR, for those people that don't know, is a pretty much all volunteer force of people that help to make sure that if you deploy or you're a member of the Guard and Reserve, when you leave and you come back, your job hasn't been taken away, which it so often is. You're discriminated against because you're in the Guard
and Reserve. It's illegal to do that, right?
It is illegal. People still do it, and it's jacked up.
It is jacked up for the. So thank you for ESGR and Stephanie Pofter. I think I say her name properly, but I will hear about it if I did not. So that's my shout out for today. If you don't have one, why don't you just get us out of here? Because we have birth month to celebrate.
We got to go eat all the cake and do whatever Jeff wants to do all month. And you know what he wants you to do this month? Subscribe. Do it. Subscribe to the Tango Alpha Lima podcast. I don't know why every week I got to say this specifically to you, Susan. Do it. Apple Podcasts. We're on everything. Spotify, wherever you like, you consume them, you listen to them, you don't eat them. Leave us a review. If you don't leave us 5 stars, I'm going to take all the scorpions that I've recently found in my new Texas home, and I'm going to put them in your dreams. Okay. You want that? They're not big and they crawled into my walls. I hope you're happy. Leave us 5 stars. So the world knows how much you love us. And if you have a guest recommendation, go to legion.org/TangoAlphaLima and click on the suggest a guest link. I send people to it all the time. Everybody that I want to talk to. And I want to talk to the people that you want to talk to. And right now I want to talk to Jeff Daly of the Michigan Dailies. Jeff, I love you. Happy birthday.
Aw, you're my favorite human being on the screen with me right now.
Aw.
Holly, poor Holly. Holly made a horrible face, but she's not on the screen. She covers herself up on the screen. All right. So we had a lot of fun today. This show is not filmed with IMAX cameras like the documentary that we are hoping you're going to see. But we think that we come in high fidelity brilliance and high fidelity good lookingness. So you have all of that. And with that, I'm going to take my humility and I'm going to declare season 4, episode 158, mission complete.